Good afternoon and welcome to the Sitka Nature Show. This is your host, Matt. I want to thank you for joining me here on my final show of 2020. We are quite close to the winter solstice, which officially occurs at just after 1 a.m. Alaska time Monday morning. Monday is our shortest day of the year. And our December has continued to be wet and relatively mild for the season, with a number of days this month where the lows didn't even reach the normal highs. So it has been stormy, lots of winds bringing warmth and rain to Sitka area. And it's interesting to me, as I understand it, we're in a La Nina year, which is typically a little cooler and I think a little drier than average for Southeast Alaska. So that hasn't been happening so far. It will be interesting to see if it does happen as the winter goes on. This past week, we had our tide series associated with the new moon, which tends to lead to the most extreme tides this time of year. As I often do, I headed out to Stargavin to take a look at the high tides, which are happening around the middle part of the day. As I've noticed in the past, the atmospheric conditions had an effect on the highs and lows, or how high the highest tide got, and it turned out that Tuesday ended up being the highest. I think the highest predicted was either Monday or Sunday, but Tuesday ended up being the highest tide. You could tell by where the little pieces of grass and vegetation had floated up and collected just at the margin of the tide. And part of the old Nelson Logging Road, which is now a separate trail from the redone road, was underwater, as has happened in the past. And looking at the NOAA site, I found that the highest tide was just over 13 feet that day. And that turned out to be the highest tide of the year. This got me a little bit curious. It was the only 13-foot tide of the year. And I discovered that you can check extremes for date ranges on the NOAA website. So I took a look at all the 10 highest and 10 lowest tides of the year. It turned out all 10 of the highest tides took place in the winter season, that is January, February. There might have been one in March, but otherwise November, December, so late fall or winter. And the lowest tides were evenly split between April, the spring, April, May, and then the fall, which and winter, which included November, December, January, February. Of course, January and February being from early in the year. The lowest tide of the year was a minus 3.67. It happened back in April. The lowest tides of this series were not nearly so low, at just a minus 2 or so. It is still an interesting time to get out. I've not spent a lot of time out on the beach in the evening low tides during the winter season, but my son has been especially keen on finding nudibranchs as well as some other new-to-him intertidal creatures, and so he was pretty dedicated during the series getting out each of the low tides. And I joined him for several of the nights for part of the time he was out. Each night I was able to take pictures of species I had never seen before, some of which I found, some of which he or my daughter had found. It was quite interesting to see the difference between the normal low tide experience I've had, which has been in daylight in the springtime or the summer, and in the evening when it's dark out with a spotlight, I noticed that some things actually stand out a little bit more. And I don't know whether, I suspect there is some difference due to behavioral when some of the creatures might be more active at night. But I also wonder if it's just the way that the light is and it tends to focus my attention on a smaller spot and then highlight some of the things because it's a very focused sort of light as opposed to the broad daylight. In any case, it was quite an interesting experience down there. Weather was mixed, but fortunately not too frigid. So it is something that I would recommend you check out if you've not done before. Just get a good light and head down to the beach during a low tide series. The next lowest tide series will be in January around the new moon. There's a low tide series around a full moon as well, but not quite as low. Lately, there's been a number of birds continuing around. The brambling and purple finch were both seen in the last week. Also had a northern shrike recently at Stargavin, and a ring-billed gull showed up one day at Swan Lake. It has not been seen since, but it's a very late sighting for a bird that's unusual any time of year here around Sitka. If you've been noticing things in the natural world, I'd love to hear about it, whether it's from your yard or out on further adventures. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or get on Facebook and like the Sitka Nature page there. It's always great just to hear what folks are seeing. But also particularly curious if there's mysteries that you've noticed, that things that you're curious about, love to hear about that as well. If you'd like to hear recordings of past shows, you can visit sitkanature.org/raven, and this show, among the many others, will be archived there, where you can download and listen to them as you wish. The conversation I have for this week's show is one I recorded yesterday with Jen Cedarleaf and Victoria Vosberg. They joined me over the internet from Victoria's home, where they were watching birds as we chatted, and came up a little bit in the conversation. Victoria and Jen are the longtime coordinators for the Christmas Bird Count here in Sitka. It is happening again this year on January 2nd, just a little less than 2 weeks from today. But things are a little bit different this year due to the restrictions in place as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. And so we'll go ahead and join the conversation with Victoria talking a little bit about how they are running things this year.
We're doing things as much the same as we can, in that we have the same routes, but we cannot have a planning meeting. Audubon is being very strict with taking any risks around COVID. So they banned any sort of planning meetings, any sort of after gatherings, anything like that. But they said that we were welcome to still do a count. They acknowledged that most counts might only get partial coverage, and they said partial data is better than no data. So if that happens, that's okay. Because we can't do a planning meeting, we have decided to only have birders that have participated before, because it is a little bit confusing where to bird, how to fill out the paperwork, that sort of thing. So that's why we made the choice to only use people experienced in counting in our Christmas bird count. I have asked everyone if they would like a route to email me at baldeaglevet@gmail.com to request a route. And quite a few people have requested routes. I'm going to say we have, it's a little, maybe 40% of the routes taken at this point. So there's still plenty left. But at the same time, I've been pretty happy with the response. And I'm going to be putting outside of Pets Choice Veterinary Clinic all of the routes in a tote, and people can just stop by and pick those up on New Year's Day or your count day. And that way, once again, we won't have any gatherings. The clinic will be closed. So hopefully just one person will open the tote, grab their checklist, and go birding.
Nice. So we've had some pretty good turnout for last few years, it seems like. So I imagine there's a fair pool of people with experience that partly the challenge, I suppose, is just getting the word out to them. So hopefully if anybody's listening to this and hasn't already been in contact, they'll get in touch with you. That's baldeaglevet@gmail.com.
Correct. Yes. And we do have a few of our annual birders that bird every year that have not contacted me. So I'd really like them to do that. One thing I'd also like to point out is count week's really going to be important this year. If we have fewer people counting, it'll be pretty easy to miss a species. So count week starts Wednesday, December 30th and goes through Tuesday, January 5th. And that's where if you see an interesting bird, you can just use that same email and report it to me. And we don't need the number of the bird that you see, but we can add it to our list as a count week bird.
I think another really important thing for us this year is going to be people birding their feeders. You know, if they can't get out and they or they're not used to birding, they're just beginning, it would be a good thing for everybody to just, you know, try to get some time in at their feeder each day, or sorry, count day.
Yeah. And if someone wants to bird their feeder, please send me an email and I will leave a feeder count sheet out for you.
So multiple ways to participate. You can get out and wander around and census the birds in the neighborhood, or count at the feeder where you're just taking the high count for the day that you see at one time of any given species. And last year it seemed like we had a couple of interesting birds that showed up. One was a black-headed grosbeak. That might have been the first for the count.
Yeah, I think it was. I actually wrote down a list of the interesting birds from last year. You're right, the black-headed grosbeak, a dunlin, golden eagle, magpie, mountain bluebird, gray-crowned rosy finch, and a McKay's bunting were seen.
Yeah, so that's quite a list of things. This year we have a brambling that's been around and was still seen as late as this week. So as was a purple finch, although the purple finch seems to be hanging out with a flock of pine grosbeaks.
Oh, I still need to see that purple finch. I thought it was gone.
David Krause just saw it along Lincoln Street within the last couple of days, in with a flock of pine grosbeaks. So,
oh, I want to see the pine. There's so many birds out I haven't seen because the weather's just been so terrible. I don't want to go out.
Well, I think this flock of pine grosbeaks, it's been reported by a number of people in the neighborhoods, kind of between Lincoln Street and Sawmill Creek, around Market Center, Bjorka.
Yeah.
So I think they've been moving around. Sitting probably most of the mountain ash trees.
I'd like to get a nice photo of one of those. They're so pretty. Have there been lots of crossbills around?
I actually haven't seen any crossbills lately. I'm not sure if there's been some up high, but there's been the crossbills and Bohemian waxwings and pine grosbeaks have both been around. Most often reported over on Japonsky, but that may be. That may be due to the fact that people are over there looking for the, spending time with the, hoping to see the brambling more. And there was actually a great horned owl over there. Within the last week or two, somebody else saw an adult northern goshawk chasing pine siskins, which is kind of fun.
Ooh, that is cool.
I've seen juvenile goshawks myself. I've seen an adult once, maybe twice. But most of the ones I've seen have been juveniles for whatever reason. So yeah, it'd be a lot of birds out there. The great horned owl is one that don't seem to get here very often. I don't know if they're around and just not reported or what, but this one was much easier to observe than the last one that I had seen, which is tucked up in the trees.
I think I called you for that one.
You did, yeah. Yeah, that was behind the Methodist church.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, at least. And so, yeah, some interesting birds been around, and it's always interesting to see what turns up. You know, when you actually get around and visit all the neighborhoods, sometimes things pop up that have been around, but people just don't notice them. So that's one advantage of Christmas bird count. It's the opportunity and chance to find some things that have been around. Oh, a wood duck's been at Swan Lake as well, a female wood duck. So
a coot.
And the coot
is still around.
Ring-billed gull, that's right. It showed up. So far, it's only was seen the one day. It kept coming back to the lake that day, but it hasn't been seen since then, as far as I know.
Huh. And then there was that yellow-billed loon.
Yes, yellow-billed loon. In very cooperative, when I was watching it, at the near the boat haul out in Sealing Cove, just kind of there pretty close to shore, and diving and coming up. And
yeah, it kind of seems like it must have either gone out further or took off, because I don't think anybody's seen it since.
Yeah, it was there at least a couple of days over a course of a week, I think. And then somebody else reported one in Eliason Harbor. So I don't know if it was the same one. I don't know if it's been moving around or what. But I think they're in the area every winter. We just don't always have a good opportunity to watch them along the road system. So it's kind of nice to see that one.
Yeah. The one thing we do need for Christmas bird count that's always seems to be our toughest thing to do is to have people go out and cover the water, because we have a lot of water in our circle.
Nobody has signed up for the water so far?
One person has signed up for the water.
So that, of course, ends up being fairly weather dependent.
Right. And there, I mean, there are some years we get hundreds of MERS and, you know, lots of birds that we wouldn't get if we didn't have people out on the water. So it's a really important piece of our Christmas bird count, but again, totally weather dependent. And if count day is like the weather has been lately, I'm not so sure that it would be a good idea to send someone out on the water.
Yeah. The one year I got out on the water that I most remember, we had, it was chilly, but it was calm, and the tide worked out that we could go into No Thoroughfare Bay. And so we went into No Thoroughfare at High Slack, and there was a pied-billed grebe in there. And I think it was in there that we saw like 70 red-breasted mergansers, which was a crazy high count for here.
Yeah, a lot of times there's geese tucked up in there.
And I think sometimes, like last year, within the last couple of years, I was in Alyukina, and there was a Eurasian widgeon in there. And there'd been one seen at the park, so I wondered if it was going back and forth. But a lot of times I think these bays near town have a lot of stuff that it's easy to not realize it's there just because it's, unless you happen to go there.
That's good to know. We're going out on the boat for Christmas, and I've been wondering where the birds are. So just the little bays around Sitka, mm-hmm. We'll have to check them out.
Yeah, if you get into the, you know, get where you can see the flats. And the thing is that they can hide pretty easily in the grasses and stuff. Like if you imagine at Totem Park or Stargaven, you know, you have the elevated boardwalk a bit and you can kind of see down there. But if you were on a boat kind of looking, that they were in that at Stargaven below the viewing platform, there's that big kind of pool. But if you imagine that there was, you know, obviously there's a road there to block it from the ocean side, but some kind of beach or meadow there, and then that kind of pool in there, they could just be in there and it would be hard to see. So the tide seems to matter, you know, as to where they are and how easy they are to see as well. So, but I think there's a lot of stuff that winters around. I've been curious about that and how or if it's possible to just kind of go explore like Port Krestoff, which isn't really in the count circle, but I think there's birds that winter there, especially when it's not icy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the place is iced up. So it's all things considered, it seems like things are kind of progressing for the bird count. And if folks are interested in participating, if they've done so in past years, they're welcome to do so again this year by emailing Victoria at, let's see, baldeaglevet@gmail.com.
Yep, you got it.
If you're in one of so we have a Sitka Birds email list and a Sitka Birds Facebook. So if you are involved in either of those or following either of those, I think you've already posted and maybe you're going to post again some information about joining.
Yeah, I'll probably this week I'll do another post with the routes that are available. Hopefully we'll get a couple more people signing up.
Nice. So in this year of COVID disruption and kind of lack of travel for many people, I know you guys in the past have liked to travel other places around the state and around the country, even maybe even around the world. Maybe you've gone places out of North America, but for birds, I don't imagine that was as easy to do this year. But have you had a chance to, like, what's been, have you been satisfying your birding itch this year?
It's been a little difficult this year. We were lucky enough to be down in South Padre Island in March, right before COVID really hit, and we were at a conference down there, but also stayed a little longer, went down a little early, saw some birds down there, lots of birds we'd never seen. The highlight for me was the whooping cranes, I think. I'd see those. We saw lots of different species of hawks that we'd never seen, which was kind of fun. And then we returned to Sitka, and we've been here ever since. So Lazaria Drive has been amazing as far as birding goes. It's fun to go over there and just see all the birds that are gathering all the time. Getting really nice photos of some of the birds over there.
Yeah, it's been fun to see those. Lots of juncos, of course, but then also just a nice mix of sparrows and the brambling and purple finch that was there for a while. The grosbeaks and waxwings have been seen there. A couple of flickers, although I heard one of the flickers, maybe something happened to it. Somebody was telling me that the flicker that's still around had been really crying out one day, and then since then they've only seen the one flicker. So I wonder if there's been a sharpshin hawk over there and a goshawk at least. So I wonder if maybe the one flicker got taken out by a raptor.
Huh. Or the great horned owls around.
Oh, that's true.
Took it out.
Yeah, and I did where it was first found and perched, there was a number of feathers below that perch, and I don't know if that was, I suspect it was from the great horned owl. I haven't had a chance to, I actually forgot about it until just this moment, but I collected a few of them and I'm hoping to get them identified, but I'm guessing they were snipe feathers.
That's what I thought they were too. I got pretty lucky because my husband and I went out on the boat several times, so I was able to do birding and mammal watching from the boat this year in a social distancing manner.
What sort of places did you get out to?
Yeah, we went to Glacier Bay, and so I don't know that I saw any lifers. Did I? I don't think I did.
I don't think you did either.
But I did, you know, see some just new behaviors and birds in different spots that I hadn't seen. Got to take a lot of photos.
See a lot of tapeworms.
That's true. and I think the gulls were eating the tapeworms that were coming out of the bears.
Oh wow! So how did that work? So there was you were seeing bears in Glacier Bay.
I kind of saw bears everywhere we went. We saw a lot of bears last summer, but the most bears we saw were at Hidden Falls Hatchery, and several of them had tapeworms coming out their rear end. And I'm pretty sure that I saw a gull come down and eat the tapeworms.
Yuck.
Yeah. You probably thought it was delicious.
I know. You probably thought it was a good noodle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I have to say that does trigger a little bit of a like, ugh,
yeah.
response in me. But yeah, no doubt the gull, it's not like anybody was forcing the gull to do it. So presumably it was something it wanted.
So Matt, did you get on the Bird the Feck, FECK at home Facebook page?
I didn't. Or I don't think that I did. I don't remember now.
That was pretty fun to do. It was created by someone in Australia to, you know, entertain people during lockdown all around the world. And they kept putting out all of these challenges. And they were actually recording all the birds all around the world that were seen from people's yards. They have a Bird the Feck at Home big day. And we,
oh yeah, they have a Google spreadsheet that you can go on. They've listed all the birds in the world and you can go on there and fill out. I think you're on there like six times or something.
Yeah. Cause I saw some interesting birds that people obviously in the rest of the world weren't seeing from their house. I was pretty lucky because with my spotting scope, I can actually see the long-tailed ducks and
You had a bufflehead and a long-tail.
Yeah. So especially at the beginning of the pandemic, that was a lot of fun to do that.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I've heard rumors of somebody in Juneau having a 200 species yard list, but it does involve some spotting scope and help with people over on Douglas Island, for example. I'll say, yeah, that bird you see flying, that's that bird. But a little bit of a stretch in some ways. But yeah, that's kind of interesting. I actually don't bird my yard too much, but I didn't in the entire year, I didn't go more than 25 miles from my house. And I only went more than 15 miles from my house for like a couple hours. There was a, earlier in the year, there was a banded, a collar, actually a radio, it's not collared, but a radio tagged, satellite tagged bar-tailed godwit, or was it a black, it was an unusual godwit for a year. I think it was bar-tailed, but I can't remember.
It was a bar-tailed.
Yeah.
And it was shown up at Dry Pass between Krestov Sound and Sukhoi. And so the logistics didn't end up working out that well. I only had like an hour on the ground, on the beach, so to speak, there to look around one day. So I didn't have as much opportunity as I want. But that's the only time I went more than 15 miles from my house was that one day to go up there and look for it. And I didn't find it, but it was interesting to get up there and kind of poke around just a little bit. But other than that, mostly almost everything has been on the road system, a few handful of boat trips, just around the sound this year. And that's pretty normal for me though. I don't really go anywhere else. So, and when I do, I don't usually go birding. So for me this year was kind of like nobody else was traveling, but I was doing the same as usual. Well, and I noticed, so Jen, do you use eBird at all, Jen?
I do not eBird.
Yeah, I was thinking that I didn't remember seeing your name. I've started using eBird more in the last year, and it's still not my favorite, but it works all right. The other thing that I'd been using as a personal sort of tracking thing, I stopped using as much because I started using iNaturalist a lot more. But I know, Vicky, you do a lot of eBird. It seems like you're almost every day. Do you have a streak going for eBird list?
I actually do. and I'm so worried I'm going to blow it. eBird has all these challenges. And one of their challenges is to do a checklist a day for a year. And I hadn't really planned to do it until I read about it in January. And it was just pure luck that I had already done a checklist a day, 10 days into January. And I thought, what the heck, I'll give it a try. And this was definitely the perfect year to do it with not much else to do. My most challenging day was when Jen and I were flying back from Texas and we had to leave Texas in the dark and we were arriving in Sitka in the dark. We had a long layover at the Seattle airport, but we really didn't feel comfortable leaving. So I had to bird the Seattle airport.
Hey, we got a pigeon.
Yes, I think we got a pigeon and a gull.
No house sparrow?
No house sparrow. No.
No.
And no starling.
We were at the Alaska Airlines. Their room, whatever, boardroom.
Boardroom, yeah.
So I was looking out over the runway, so there really wasn't much.
I think, yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I've been doing a checklist, at least one checklist a day. I usually try to do two just in case I forget. And a lot of my checklists have been either my roof or out at Stargavin. I also try to do the monthly challenge. And this month's challenge is posting 50 photos and then ranking them. You have to give them however many stars. It just helps them sort through the photos on eBird. So I've been working on that. That's been a bit of a challenge because the weather's been so bad. It's hard to take photos when the weather's this bad. But I think I got my 50 photos in already for the month of December.
Oh, well, you're doing all right.
With time to spare.
Yep.
Yeah, barely over halfway through. So the eBird thing, yeah, I've been noticing the checklist coming in from like your feeding station and Stargavin and Lazaria Drive and the various places and your checklist from your boat trips. I don't see what comes in from Glacier Bay, so I didn't know that you'd gone to Glacier Bay, but I looked like you went up to West Chichikov and over to like Kidden Falls and those a couple of times.
He's stalking you.
Well, then I get curious, like, because one of the things I am really curious about is how things are different, just not that far away. So like even the bays south of town, for example, or north of town, you know,
yeah,
what's out there, or just out in the sound. Or if you go over to the east side of the island, like, there's a lot more Bonaparte schools, I think, over there than there are in on this side. So those are the things that I get kind of curious about. So when people do get out, somebody recently was in Appleton Cove or Rodman Bay and reported a Western grebe and a couple other things that seemed interesting to me. So, you know, those are the sorts of things that I'm just like, you know, it's where elsewhere in the world, and elsewhere in North America in particular, people don't think anything of driving 20 miles, 30 miles to go birding. But by the time you've gone 30 miles, you're up in Salisbury Sound here, which seems like to me, it feels like that's a long ways away. Or, you know, you're down south of Goddard to go 30 miles south. You know, I'm not even sure how far that'd be, but beyond Bjorka. So it's just an interesting sort of perspective that what we do here is very concentrated, even going out on the sound. You know, Lazaria is, I think, 15 miles out. So yeah, it's not really that far compared to what most people do. So it's just a different perspective, I guess, on you know, places that you go birding.
Well, look for more checklists this Christmas. We don't know where we're going. We'll just see where the wind blows us.
Well, yeah, I guess it'll be somewhat weather dependent, but hopefully you get to see some stuff. And yeah, there's a few. Well, if you see a Western grebe, that'd be interesting. I think Western grebe is probably my worst photo documented bird. You can tell that it's a Western grebe, but it was out. I was at Totem Park on the tide flats, and it was out probably halfway to the islands. And I have better camera now than I did then, but even so, even with a better camera, it wouldn't have been a good picture. But it was identifiable, which is the sort of first bar. But I haven't seen one since. So Connor got an equally bad picture of one from probably even further away, also at the park one year. But it was out going towards middle channel, I think. So it's just kind of that's one of those species. And this year, actually, for me, I got my final regularly occurring species. I finally was able to see and then get pictures of here. I don't have pictures of Aletheus storm petrel, so that one I'd seen before, but not photographed in the wild. But snow bunting over at the airport was the last regularly occurring species I hadn't seen or photographed in Sitka. So,
oh wow,
kind of fun.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah,
I know. I've only got two new birds for my Alaska birds this year.
What are your two new ones?
Now I have to remember.
Oh, man, we should have looked this up.
I know, we should have.
The snow bunting was one for me, and I know there was one or two more.
Oh, one was a brown cowbird at Swan Lake.
Oh, brown-headed cowbird. Nice, yeah.
And the other was... It'll come to me. I can't remember. I didn't write them down, even though you told me to write them down. What did I see?
I could run, get the list.
No.
did you see the Brewer's blackbird?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. There was a Brewer's blackbird. See, I feel like I'm missing out on all of these reports that...
Oh, the Brewer's blackbird. There was a Brewer's blackbird around in early May. First at Swan Lake, and then it was over at Search.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't see that one.
That was a new one for me, along with the snow bunting. There was the, did either of you see the hybrid shoveler cinnamon teal hybrid?
I don't think I saw that one, no.
It's funny because it looks like, because it has the crescent like of a blue-winged teal on its face, but it's actually, from the hybridization work that people have done, it's actually a shoveler. A cinnamon teal hybrid.
Oh.
So that one somebody found, Karen Johnson, I believe, found at Halibut Point Rec in the spring. Oh, the third bird for me this year was the Western Kingbird.
Yeah, that was it. Western Kingbird. That was a new Alaska bird for me. And then I didn't see the ring-billed gull, even though I've seen hundreds of them. I just haven't seen one in Alaska. And I still haven't gotten the darn purple finch. That is on my nemesis bird list for Alaska. And what else? There was one other bird here that I didn't get to see. And I can't remember why. I think Victoria ran to get the list or something, but now I've remembered bird. I don't know what the other really different bird was, but.
Yeah, there were a few. I think I'm going to end up with about 155 or 156 species for the year, but there was a handful of ones that I never saw the mountain bluebird. It was around into January and I looked for it a couple times, but didn't happen to see it. And then I don't think I saw a cackling goose this year. I might have to dig through my photos. I'm pretty sure I saw a herring gull, but I never recorded one. So I'll have to dig through my photos to see, see if that was the case. And then there was a box of swift and violet green swallows out at Stargavin that I never saw, but I did get pictures for the first time of warbling vireo, which was the first time I'd.
Oh, that one. That's the one I missed.
Yeah, we both missed that one.
Did you? There was one at Castle Hill in the fall as well.
Yeah, that's the one I missed.
Oh, there was the springtime one, which is the first one I photographed.
I know. I didn't even know about that one. Kitty told me that she saw that one, and I was like, wait, what? There was one in the spring? I didn't see either one of them. I tried the Castle Hill one quite a number of times, but never got there when it was around.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's the ring-billed gull. Like, I got nice pictures of several species that weren't, you know, I'm at the point now where even unusual species are often ones I've seen before. So in Sitka, if I traveled elsewhere, I could use my state numbers, but since I don't, then it's mostly just Sitka birds. But the great horned owl was pretty cooperative one day, just kind of out there on a alder branch out in the open. So that was kind of fun.
I was going to say there was a local who saw a pygmy owl with I don't know what it had killed, but it was another small bird. And it was in the park just sitting there eating the bird. And she does tours. And so she knew, because we had a pygmy owl at the Raptor Center, she knew it was a pygmy owl and got to snap some photos of it on her cell phone. But she was pretty excited to see a pygmy owl out in the wild. So that was fun.
Yeah, I think it was eating a buried thrush, which is funny to me because pygmy owls, I think, are smaller than buried thrushes. They sure look like it.
Yeah, they are. Small but fierce.
Yeah, it seems like it. So I guess you get a chance to experience the personality of them. Do they kind of have a bigger attitude than their size should suggest they should?
Oh yeah. All the little owls do, I feel like. I think they have to.
I had a pygmy owl a couple weeks ago show up in my tree above my feeders. I couldn't get my camera up fast enough before a flicker chased it off.
Yeah, flickers are pretty big, and they got that beak that they could probably inflict a little bit of. Somebody told me a story once of actually a flicker killing a squirrel. Yeah, I think it might have been my brother, that the squirrel was just, and of course squirrels can be bad nest predators, and I think that the squirrel was getting too close and bothering the flicker, and the flicker just impaled it essentially with its bill.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we're having a little squirrel problem nesting in our home. So for my birthday, I asked my husband to build a squirrel house to get it to move out. And he has built a squirrel mansion. So we will see.
Wait, I haven't seen this yet. I didn't see this.
The paint's still dry.
A mansion.
Okay. I think it's going to be too heavy to put in a tree.
Oh, Lordy. But you guys saw, didn't you see a shrike out at Stargavin?
I did. Yes, that's right.
And it looked like an adult from the pictures that I saw that you'd taken.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen an adult shrike yet. So I looked the next day and didn't find it again. And went out there several times. in subsequent days never saw it. So I don't know if it stuck around. Somebody else did report a strike out there in the days following.
Well, I have Jen to thank for that because I asked her to go birding and she said no. That's why I got to see the shrike.
I know, and I was mad, but I've seen shrike, but still, it's always fun to see them because they're so rare.
Yeah. Yeah. Around here, at least they are. And it doesn't look like a magpie came back this year. I think last year there was actually two of them around town. But it doesn't seem like they've returned this year, at least not so far.
I know. I like those magpies.
So the squirrel, it's gotten into your house. Do you think that it will, are you going to have to exclude it from the house? Or do you think it'll just be drawn to this mansion?
Well, it actually has a very specific branch that it climbs to get into its house. Mm-hmm. But if I built a new house for it and filled it with delicious, scrumptious nuts and squirrel food, and then cut down the branch, I'm hoping he'll be forced into the new house.
This mansion's kind of exciting. I'm excited to see it.
Well, it's funny. So do you have a problem with squirrels getting your bird food?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He eats quite a bit of bird food, which is fine. What's not fine is sometimes he runs around and chases all the birds away before he eats. I don't know why. Some days he just eats and other days he's very angry at all the birds. But I will be in the middle of birding and something cool will be out there. And then here comes the squirrel and chases them all away. I see the white-throated sparrow at my feeder at one point. Since we've been doing the show, I've seen a Lincoln sparrow and a white-crowned sparrow. Of course, I get lots of juncos, but those are kind of unusual birds for me.
Yeah, Lincoln sparrow seems to be a good year for them so far. And in the past, they, I think, weren't considered to winter this far north, but over the last few years, it seems like we've had at least a couple of them each winter somewhere around town.
Yeah, I've had Lincoln sparrow just show up once or twice before, but this one is a regular pretty much every day.
I suppose, especially since you're working to continue maintain your checklist streak, that you have been sort of attending to the birds maybe in a more consistent fashion than you might otherwise.
Exactly. And probably because of COVID, I've really got my roof birding area set up fancy. I actually created a brush pile on my roof.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Seem to love it. I've got a couple of suet feeders up and I've never been able to get the flickers to come. Finally, this year I've had as many as 5 flickers at one time.
5. Wow. I wonder if that's a family group.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The flickers seem to come at dawn, so I can barely see them usually. Most of the flickers do seem to be the red by yellow shafted.
Yeah, I've never seen one here that didn't show signs of intergrade.
I think I have one red shafted.
Well, I'd be interested in seeing the pictures. And I'm not saying that they don't occur in the pure form. It's just everyone I've ever managed to get pictures of or seen pictures of has turned out to be like the facial characteristics are often the nape crescent and the color of the face. I don't remember what the details are, but it just seems like the vast majority of ours here, excuse me, are the integrates. So
yeah, I'd agree.
Definitely interested in if we do get, like, occasionally there's some that are reported as pure one or the other. Usually if it's reported as a pure, it's reported as a pure red, but I've seen a few that have very yellow shafts, but then again, you look at their, I've seen a couple that had very yellow looking shafts, but the face again showed characteristics of the red shafted as well.
And I've got that coming to my feeder. I've got a couple of those with the yellow shafts and the red mustache. The other thing I set up this year is, I created a little, with a Pyrex dish, created a little pond with a bubbling fountain.
Oh, yeah?
Nobody's gone to it.
There was one in there earlier.
What? You're kidding.
After I unplugged it, there was a little junco in there.
I missed it. All right.
Maybe they don't like the bubbles.
I didn't say anything because I thought they're always going in there. How do I know?
The only thing I've read is that says that they're attracted to moving water. That's why Pebbles going.
Well, I've certainly seen birds taking baths in mud puddles.
I know. And they do that right out in the parking lot all the time.
Yeah, it's not like there's been a lack of water around lately. I wonder sometimes how attractive it is here. Although my neighbors have a container van that has puddles that are on the top, form on the top of it. And I've seen the juncos and sparrows kind of doing their bathing thing on the top of it as well. So, yeah, that's interesting. And the squirrels sometimes are noxious, but you don't mind feeding them. And do you get crows very often?
Yes, crows became a big problem for me. I think one day I had 40 crows here, and then they just wipe everything out, drive away the birds, eat all the food, and just leave the birding area in ruins. I finally got so frustrated that I bought a super squirter water squirt gun. And if I pump it up quite a bit, I can just barely reach a crow. I don't think I've actually squirted a crow yet, but that stream of water coming out does seem to scare them, but only a little bit. They'll fly over to the power lines and wait for me to put the squirt gun away, and then they'll just come right back. Luckily, another birder in town told me about purchasing a Halloween crow and putting it on their roof upside down, making it look dead. She let me borrow her crows because with Christmas, everything's taking so long to get here. And I think it's working. I've got this fake Halloween crow laying on its back with a couple rocks on it so it doesn't blow away. And I have not seen any crows raiding my bird food yet. I've seen them come over in the trees and kind of check things out, but that was it. So I was really happy that I was able to get that fake dead crow.
Yeah, it can be hard to keep food out or even afford to keep food out at the rate the crows eat it.
Exactly, yeah. Now I've got starlings. Since we've been talking, I've had 6 starlings come in. But they don't eat everything. They'll just have a snack and then take off.
Take off. There's been some years. One year I had, I think it was homemade suet that I'd done that none of the birds really seemed to like. And then it just sat there for months, really. And then and every once in a while, something would pick at it. And then finally, one day or over a couple of days, it seemed like the starlings came in and they just ate it all. So I was like, all right, that's good. But mostly I don't have starlings come to my yard too much. So
yeah, the starlings do seem to prefer the suet. That's for sure.
Yeah, it is interesting that just the wildlife challenges, I guess. So hopefully, yeah, it'd be interesting to find out if the fake crow appearing dead is a long term, or if they kind of figure it out at some point and go, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I may end up having to move it around or something. I'll let you know.
Crows seem to be a seasonal issue around my house. They sometimes, and not every year, but sometimes they come through and they, it seems like it's often young birds are already fledged. I mean, they're so that you can still tell they're young, but mm-hmm. they're out of the nest and flying around and stuff. And they go, and they, one year especially, they were picking my strawberries that were green, and they would just like peck it and then just leave it. And I was getting kind of annoyed at that. And they'd also hit the cherry trees. So I found that kind of annoying as well. But I know that now the Westmark, the Chiatica, used to have like fake owls on the roof, but that only seemed to work for a little while. And then the gulls were all back again. So
They never move, so they're not scary.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have heard rumors of, and actually I maybe seen something on Facebook about a Raptor Center television show or a reality TV show featuring the Raptor Center and maybe even starring the two of you at times. So I was curious to hear a little bit more about that.
What's it called?
Alaska Animal Rescue.
So the Raptor Center is one third of the show. They tell a story about, say, a bald eagle that we've rescued. Then they flip to the Sea Life Center, and then they flip to
the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center.
So maybe you watch a little bit about a seal, and then you watch a little bit about a bison. So it's just kind of continuing the whole show, flipping through the three centers, looking at Alaska wildlife and what we do for them.
Basically, it covers, we're the sky or air part of it, and the conservation center is the land part, and the Sea Life Center is the water part. So
are they like woven throughout a show, an episode where like they leave in a dramatic state, we don't know what's going to happen to the eagle, and then they switch to the different story, and then they come back eventually to find out what happened.
Yeah.
You know the formula, man.
Yeah.
We had a pretty dramatic rescue, and it was the show opener.
Yeah.
So
I had to go up on a fire truck to get an eagle out of a tree way, way up in the tree. They had the ladder maxed out. And the eagle had impaled its wing on a broken branch on the tree. I've never seen anything like it. It was nuts.
It was just hanging there, and it was like...
Oh, it was hanging from its wing?
Oh, it was hanging from its wing, and I went back and forth. I was like, is it dead? Is it alive? Because it was just hanging there. It wasn't moving. It wasn't really blinking. It wasn't doing anything. And I thought, for sure, this bird is dead. But we can't leave an eagle hanging up in a tree dead. And then when Victoria got the ladder up close, when they got up there, it started moving. And I was like, oh, my God, it's alive. I can't believe it's alive.
Oh, boy, was it alive. It bit me a whole bunch of times.
Yeah. It was not happy.
Yeah. Wow. So... yeah, that seems like a pretty dramatic one. So I guess, you know, things take time in the hour-long format show. I'm imagining they're wanting to complete a whole eagle story over the course of one show, for example. So the way that it works in practice is like there'll be filming of the actual rescue, and then over the next however many days or weeks that it takes for the rehab to happen, that there's follow-ups. Is that what it's kind of doing, or is it just tracking the initial rescue and then leaving the story there?
Yeah, no, they try to complete a whole story in one episode. And so that's exactly it. They film the rescue, and then they film, you know, the steps that the bird goes through in rehabilitation. And then you get to the end result, which in this case, luckily, happened to be a release. And so, yeah, you get to see the whole process of what happens to this eagle that we named Skewer. And you get to see it from start to finish. And I think the episodes are only like a half an hour long.
No, I think they're an hour.
No.
Well, I haven't seen it.
You haven't watched it.
What do I know?
I think they're like half an hour long. And they something that took us like 6 months happens in this very short amount of time on television. So, but yeah, it's pretty fun.
If folks want to check this out and for whatever reasons that they might find it entertaining and interesting, I'm kind of curious, because I know how dramatized reality television tends to be.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
And it's nothing quite like watching a place that I'm familiar with and people that I know being sort of framed within this really dramatic, tense sort of situation. And it makes me laugh. So
I know some of the scenes are kind of like, I'm like, oh man, why did they show that? But, it is available on Disney Plus.
Okay.
And I think they also may, I don't know if you have a Prime account, I think you can maybe get it on Amazon.
Yeah.
Interesting. So folks can watch that. And it sounds like, so you've done a full season of it. Is that right?
Yes.
Or a full season has been broadcast or streamed or is available?
A full season is available. Yeah. It's only 6 episodes. So, so it's like a short little season, but it's fun. We have some good stories on there.
I'll have to check it out because one of my hobbies is to, in television shows that film in places that I'm at least somewhat familiar. I like identifying the plants in the background sometimes. If it's happening in Alaska or Sitka in particular, if there's clips or something, then it's always interesting to me how they portray it. Cause of course I have my own experience of being here and living here. And,
right.
There was the salt commercial from a few years back that was filmed in Sitka.
Oh yeah. The best part for me is when they have, they'll have the cars driving around Sitka, like we're going on a rescue out at Stargavin, but the car is clearly driving up like Indian River Road or something. they just need that filler, but it's hilarious that it's
right. Nobody else is going to know where anything's going, but that is one of the fun things that's, yeah. I don't know. It entertains me at least. And no doubt that's probably why I would be watching it.
Yeah.
For that level of entertainment. So, and it sounds like, they're working on another season of it.
Yeah. We've
done more stories to come.
Yeah. But we still haven't heard when it's going to be out.
Yeah.
So if folks haven't seen it before, checked it out. Sitka is featured in Alaska Wildlife Refuge, our very own Raptor Center here with Jen and Victoria, and I imagine some others that are working there.
Yep.
Nice. Well, and I guess as we wrap up here, maybe we should just mention again, if anybody's interested in participating in Christmas Bird Count, this year it's a little different, no pre-count meeting. If you've participated in past years, due to the lack of ability to orient folks that haven't done it before, it'll be just limited to folks who haven't. Is it all right if somebody has done it before and has a friend or something that they're able to go for a walk with to come along?
Just so long as one person on the team knows what they're doing. And Audubon is discouraging birding with people outside your household.
Okay.
That note, but I will leave decisions up to the individuals.
All right.
Just make sure you mark down your, the distance that you travel and the time that you're, length of time that you're out, everything on the top of the checklist needs to be filled out because you know where you went and your guess as to whether you went 2 miles or 10 miles is going to be way better than Victoria's guess or my guess. So,
and one more reminder, don't forget to fill your feeders.
Feeders beforehand. Yeah. And so so trying to coordinate again, so we're not duplicating locations. And so email Victoria at baldeaglevet@gmail.com to request a route or find out what routes are available. And I think that covers it for the bird counts. All right. Oh, the date. I guess that's also important. The 2nd of January.
Correct.
Saturday, a little less than 2 weeks from when this show will be airing. So, well, thanks for joining me here today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Matt. Always fun.
You've been listening to a conversation I recorded yesterday with Jen Sedeleaf and Victoria Vosberg, coordinators of the Sitka Christmas Bird Count. I want to thank them for taking some time out of their day to visit with me, and thank you for listening here on the Sitka Nature Show this week. As always, I'd love to hear what you're seeing out there. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or get on Facebook and like the Sitka Nature page there. Until next time, this has been Matt on the Sitka Nature Show, KCAW, Sitka.